when you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome into the Vaccine Conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob. This is a special Facebook Live, Instagram Live, and podcast episode.
And quarantine edition.
Yeah, it's a quarantine edition. You're right. I mean, it's you have to laugh in times like this because that's how we survive and then get through all this stress. But yeah, we'll have some fun with this, you guys. It's also a serious matter as well that we'll be talking about. But yeah, we always like to try to have fun to keep our sanity. And
no, what's funny is like I wasn't even really laughing until we started recording. Because this is not, there is, I mean, I haven't really been laughing much today. There's not right, a lot to laugh about with everything that's going on. But something happens as soon as we press record. I sort of just become like giddy. And then as soon as he starts with a welcome into the vaccine, like it's every time. So if you're offended by the fact that we're laughing right now, I apologize.
Thumbs up if you're offended right now. Okay, right now.
There's a delay, so you won't see. Okay. No, I don't want you guys to be offended. But if you are,
Well, there's no thumbs up right now.
So, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. This is it's a very serious time. There's mm-hmm. We're going to cover so much. Oh my gosh, there's a bunch of thumbs up. Oh no, don't laugh. I'm so sorry.
Okay,
very serious. Let me just tell you, like, this is the amount of information that we're going through today. And this is just like not even the half.
Yours is way more than mine.
Just be doctorish, okay? And just add some things to it. Right. There's a lot of information because we have talked about the coronavirus, I think, in two different episodes mm-hmm. prior to this. But obviously, by the hour, things are changing, yeah. And there's so many articles that have come out. There's so many different ways to look at this entire thing.
So we have an article from like 4 weeks ago that we're going to break down and go over in detail
with the data
to update you guys on coronavirus
with the current numbers from 4 weeks ago. He's kidding.
As you were saying, Melissa, I don't know. Do you remember what you were saying?
Thank you for interrupting me for that very important point. There's a highlighter, so you know it. This is like serious stuff when there's a highlighter. It's very official. And we're going to hopefully in a couple days also have our next live Facebook evening discussion event. Because you guys are at home and what else are you doing? And we're trying to give you information, trying to have this discussion and conversation with you and your friends and family. Hopefully you guys are all sitting on a couch together. Like I said, put the kids to bed, the younger kids, and grab some popcorn. And now this is your nightly entertainment. Yeah. It's like back in the day when they used to have a radio show that came on at a certain time and everybody's tuning in. I mean, of course, not everyone, but I'm
so this is news to me as well that we're going to do this every couple nights.
Every couple of nights. Yeah. No, but we're definitely going to do it at least in a couple days.
Well, yeah.
Because there's another article that's really good that I want to break down, and I just couldn't add it to all of this. So there's going to be a lot. So this is going to be a very data-driven discussion. It's going to be a technical discussion. We'll do it in the way we usually do it, which is to try to break that down because there could be some of you that don't even know we have a podcast that are tuning in because maybe they've joined Dr. Bob's page or my page recently. Okay, if you've never listened and you don't know who we are, but somebody
you probably turned
you,
it off a few minutes ago.
Right. If you sent you this link, my name's Melissa Floyd. This is Dr. Bob Sears. We have a podcast called The Vaccine Conversation that you can find on iTunes and Spotify and Anchor and all the different platforms. We've had it for about a year and a half. We talk about a lot of issues as it relates to the vaccine debate and medical interventions, informed consent and medical freedom, parenting, and how that relates to medical choices. So we do this a lot. And this issue, what we're dealing with right now, isn't necessarily vaccine related, though it's absolutely related in the sense that we know a vaccine's coming down the line, and this is a discussion about infectious disease. We also have a nonprofit called Immunity Education Group that we've had for 5 years that focuses a lot on things like infectious disease and how to build your immunity and what to do about informed consent. So do you want to give them that website address in case they don't
know? Just immunityeducationgroup.org or immunityed.org.
That's why we have a doctor on the show. So Dr. Bob Sears is a pediatrician, has been practicing for over 20 years in Southern California. Many of you know him. He might be your doctor, and that's why you're tuned in right now for your children. So I've been posting a lot in the last couple of days about some of these articles that we're going to talk about today. And again, some of these articles are economic. Some of these articles are business related. Sometimes they're medical related, scientific. We're talking about herd immunity, talking about the vaccine, talking about government overreach. There are a lot of angles to what's going on right now as it relates to coronavirus. So I just need to give a quick disclaimer and let you guys know that not everyone is going to agree with me and the way that I personally think about this issue. I've had some people in our movement who follow me because of the vaccine issue who totally agree with what's going on and feel like we should even be doing more than we're doing. And I've had a few of those comments on my posts. It's a very small minority. I've had a ton of people that seem to know where I'm coming from on this, but there have been a handful. So I just want to say you could totally have a different viewpoint on this. And, you know, you could have a different political viewpoint than me. You could have a different religious lifestyle than me. There are so many differences we have. Just because we all believe in medical freedom doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything else. And that's okay. And I'm okay with you having your viewpoint. I hope you're okay with me having mine and Dr. Bob having his.
Yeah, you and I might have slightly differing viewpoints on this.
So. That's right. And the thing is I don't think anybody should be telling other adults how to think or behave during this time. I'm a little frustrated with the amount of social shaming that I'm seeing and people sort of judging everybody for not doing enough and not doing it the right way and the moral high ground that I've seen come out during this time, which is a little concerning to me and reminds me a lot of the vaccine debate and the need to get your flu vaccine for the immunocompromised.
Right.
I'm seeing a lot of parallels between that argument with what we are seeing now with social distancing, and we'll go into that. But I just want to preface this by saying you may not agree with me and it's okay. You might not like my viewpoint on any of this and it's totally fine. You don't have to follow me. You don't have to read my posts and you don't have to comment that you're going to unfollow me because I got one of those today. You don't have to give me an
exit
post.
Realize if you stopped following her.
I mean, it's not a big deal. I'm okay with you not agreeing with me. I just want to say that. And then the other thing I want to say is that some people might be wondering why I weigh in on the things that I do. Why do I have a page on my Facebook where I break down articles and highlight important things and bring the data and the statistics and the sources and the links? What makes me quote unquote qualified? We know Dr. Bob is a doctor. We know he's a medical doctor, a pediatrician. So of course, people are going to assume, you know, his opinion has weight. Yes. And it makes sense for him to join a conversation and have an opinion. It's really funny when stuff like this comes up because people are like, well, who are you? Are you a doctor or you're not a healthcare professional? But people weigh in and give opinions on all sorts of things in life when they're not an expert in that field. And I just wanted to give you guys just a quick, small little background on kind of some elements that maybe do make me a little more equipped to be a part of this conversation, even just as a mom, just as a professional, just as an educator. In case you didn't know. So, no, I'm not a doctor. I'm very aware of that. I was a very academic youngster, and I did go through high school taking all honors and AP classes, including physics and calculus my senior year. This is AP, the highest level that you can go in math and science. I did that in my senior year. I also was at UCLA in the honors program. I was there on an academic scholarship, in fact, and I started, you know, college at 17. I was young to be there, but in an accelerated academic program. I spent part of my time at UCLA studying women in medicine, and I actually followed the head of pediatric cardiology there because that's what I thought I was going to go into. So part of my time studying at UCLA was actually focused on medicine and all about medical classes, and that was the focus for me at that time. I came out of college, I went into nutrition, became a nutritionist, and also got certified with sports medicine, so studying the body in different ways, got connected with different holistic practitioners. After that time, I was also an educator on academic subjects. I ended up opening my own SAT boot camp company where I was teaching kids and prepping them for SAT math, SAT in the verbal stuff as well, but math is my main focus, tutoring kids from second grade all the way to college level. So academics has always been important to me. Educating has always been important to me. And then once I became a mom and the situation happened with my daughter, which is where she had her first adverse reactions to vaccines, I was kind of brought into the world of medical freedom and informed consent, where for the last 5 years, I've done very intense medical and scientific research as a layperson, but as an educated layperson. And I've gone deep. I dive deep. I go into the studies. I go into statistics. I go into data. I use my math background, my education background, and I analyze the data and try to make sense of it. So I've done that for the last 5 years. And then I'm also working with medical professionals like Dr. Bob, who's a medical doctor, and we're in contact daily. I get contacted by nurses, ER staff, healthcare professionals, and other medical professionals on a daily basis as it relates to this topic. They're giving me information, new studies. They're talking about their experience. I'm not just coming out of nowhere with the stuff I come up with. And so, you know, the stuff I'm sharing is really all about other experts, bringing them to the table, people across the world. I'm not just giving my, you know, quote, expert opinion. I'll find something I agree with from the basis of information I've come across, and I'll bring that to you guys. So I just wanted to give you that background, because I don't really ever go into that much, yeah, of just understanding kind of why I weigh in on these topics when I do. And again, you don't have to agree with me, and you don't have to value my opinion at all. I'm totally fine with that. I am super grateful and thankful to all of the people who write me the nicest messages that appreciate what I do bring to the table. They feel like I break things down in a way that they understand. And thank you for all of you. That's why I keep doing it. I find this all very interesting and fascinating. But that's a little bit about me as a non-doctor, but educated professional in many ways, and that's why I weigh in. So I'm sorry for that long-winded preface. I just wanted to get that out in the open in case you have no freaking clue who I am and why I'm here right now.
Yeah. Well, you're also...
Now, who are you?
Well, you're also, I mean, I've told you this before, you're probably the smartest person I know.
Well, see, even a doctor said that, so...
No, but she really is. I mean, you all know, if you follow her, you know how smart she is. But yeah, I mean, I rely on you for so much of the data analysis and statistical information and your the ideas you come up with. And yeah, so I really appreciate your perspective, because you make everything that I do, you make everything better. You make me understand things better. Because I'm not just, sometimes I'm just, you know, like the doctor, thinking about it as a doctor, but to be able to get an educated parent's perspective on everything is very valuable, I think, to all of us. And so it's even more valuable often than the doctor's perspective. So,
and I, of course, really value Dr. Bob, because he's able to bring things to the table and help me sometimes put some things in perspective that maybe I'm seeing it one way, and he'll kind of bring the other side to it. And that really helps me to feel like I have a very grounded opinion. And oftentimes I'm texting him, hey, what's the deal with this? Or what's the information on this? And he's giving me that data. So I'm still giving a more educated opinion, still based on factual information from somebody who's been doing this for over 20 years.
Yeah. But yeah, we're a fun team. You know, I mean, you make everything more fun. You make a lot of this bearable, I would say.
It's only because I laugh at your jokes when you make them.
But that was funny, Melissa. You're hilarious.
You have made some jokes this season.
Yes, I have.
That I've actually laughed at, and I was even surprised.
So
anyway, I know you guys have been really stressed, and I do, on a serious note, I want to give out my thoughts and prayers and considerations to all of the people who are freaking out right now, who are stressed, who are overwhelmed, who don't know how they're going to pay for groceries next week and the week after that, who have lost their jobs or at risk of losing their jobs. This, of course, for all of you, this has never happened in your lifetime, and we don't know what this looks like, and we don't know when the end of this is, because we've never seen it play out. I don't think enough in the mainstream media has been... Even Governor Newsom, and every time he gives a conference, he's not acknowledging the fears of the Californians and the American public. And I know how you guys are feeling, and I know the discomfort and uncertainty and the fear that is in your hearts right now, in your homes right now, and you're doing your best to put on a brave face for your kids. But there's so much uncertainty. I don't think anybody's really acknowledging it. So I just want to acknowledge all of you that are struggling right now emotionally, just to understand with what's happening right now. I'm thinking about you. I know how you feel about this. I'm right there with you. And you're not alone in this. You are absolutely seen by so many of us. Mm-hmm. And whether they want to see you and talk about you on the mainstream media or not, we're thinking about you. We love you. Our thoughts are with you. We're all in this together, and we will find a way to support each other and bring each other up however we can.
Yeah, that gives me a lot of encouragement because I'm a stressor, as you know. I worry about things. And I've been worried about, you know, the medical side of this, worried about the financial side of this for my family. And, you know, my patients, I think, have rightly, you know, if they're sick right now, they're not coming into the office because they know if it is coronavirus for their kids, it'll be super mild, you know, in almost every single instance. There will be some exceptions, but almost every single instance, the cases in kids are going to be super mild. So my office is not actually flooded with sick kids right now. So I'm actually, you know, seeing some checkups every day, people that come in for checkups, but it's been pretty slow. And so I've been stressed financially and is a big worry. You know, are we going to be able to, you know, am I even going to get paid this month? You know, I own my own business, but sometimes I don't pay myself if we don't.
And you're
make
the sole
money.
Income.
I'm the sole. Yeah, I'm the sole doctor there, so I worry about that. And then I worry, you know, are we going to, you know, is my kid going to get into, you know, college? Is college even going to be open? And I worry about all this stuff. But then I just sort of stop and think. Number one, I'm grateful that I have a family. We're all healthy. We all, you know, love each other, and we have a great home that I can sort of have as a refuge from all this. But I also have the sense that we're all in this together, and I totally see this when I'm at the store, when I'm driving around. Everyone's driving slowly. Everyone's very polite. All the stores I go to, people are kind of no after you, and no one's rushing around panicking in the store. We're all just sort of walking around calmly. You know, nodding to people, kind of staying away a little bit, sort of not getting too close. But I don't see a lot of panic. And I feel like the fact that we're all in this together, we're all going to suffer, you know, the very similar economic effects, similar health effects, probably. And we'll all get through this. The economy will recover. We don't know how long it's going to take. But I feel like that just kind of gives me a sense that we're all going to be okay in the long run. You know, some businesses might suffer. Some people will get very sick, and there will be some fatalities from this. We'll, you know, like there are with any, you know, big major serious outbreaks, we'll all recover. And I know if I can sort of just set all the worry aside for this time being and just think we will get there. We know we will get there. We'll get through this. And whether it's a few weeks, whether it's a few months, whether it's 6 months, whether it's a year, I don't know. And if I can get myself to stop worrying over something I have no control over, then I find this peace. And so that's just how I'm approaching this. I feel like I'm able to totally let all that worry go. And Cheryl, my wife, you know, my family, they're a very big part of that. And we're not stressing. I'm not stressing. So hopefully that'll, you know, me as a doctor, I'm not worried about all the kids out there. So hopefully you with kids can kind of realize, if or when your kids do get sick with this, you probably won't even know it because it'll probably just act like a regular cold for the vast majority of them. And so don't sit there in dread and fear of the personal medical impact of this on your kids. Kids will get sick and a few will be serious, but that again, that's going to be the minority. So the vast majority of you don't live in fear and panic over this. If you're a healthy child, if you're a healthy adult, I want to stress that. I can't stress that enough. And I think most medical professionals are stressing that.
You can't stress that without being stressed, though, because right. That stresses your immune system.
Right, right, right.
And that's not good. So you're right. Not stressing.
Right.
But you're
exactly.
Highlighting.
I'm highlighting it. I didn't bring my highlighter, but
I did.
Melissa does all the highlighting. So I just, you know, so for me, I'm doing well with this. You know, I'm not worried. I know we're all going to be okay. And it's kind of nice to have friends and, have, you know, neighbors around that I know. We're all in this together. No one's worried, you know, around here. And California, I mean, I know, like, Washington State, California, and New York, those are the three states that have essentially shut down for the most part. But we're all doing okay. People are out and around. I see kids skateboarding across, you know.
It's been 3 days.
No, I know. But people are riding their bikes. People are out walking. People are going to the store. People are at the beach. You know, yeah, you're not hanging out in bars and restaurants and Starbucks, but I mean, there's not this, like, it's not like panic. I don't think people are out there hoarding a bunch. There's no mobs. There's no looting. I think things are pretty calm. Is there looting?
Not yet.
Okay. Yeah.
So not yet. But
it's important we stay there, though.
You're right.
If we find that kind of peace, I think that's going to help us get through this.
So, I mean, and obviously, like, some people have it better than others. Like having a roof over your head that you know you can make a mortgage payment and you have food and you have a family that's together, it's a lot easier to feel comfortable and safe and okay and peaceful during this time.
But even if you can't make your mortgage payment, that's okay.
Well, for
now.
For
a number of months.
Yeah, for now. Right. I mean, so a couple things. It's interesting that you said, and careful not to hit the table.
I know, sorry.
We're shaking you guys, sorry. We means him. It's not me. My hands are over here like they should be. So it's interesting that your experience has been, oh, you're at stores, and maybe it's because you're coming right here in your neighborhood. I posted about this the other day, and I had so many, like hundreds of comments that agreement. I'm noticing like this eeriness when I'm out at the grocery store and when you're out places. And let me know if you guys if you guys have had the same experience by maybe a thumbs up or something like that, because I've seen a lot of people talk about this. It's like people are keeping their distance, and it's like this suspiciousness. I've seen people almost and this is me, I have kids, right? You come see, look at all the thumbs up.
Yeah.
You come with your kids, and I'm not joking with you guys, on a walking trail, not even in a grocery store, on a walking trail. Look at all those thumbs up. See? In an open air place. Okay. Not even that close to somebody. I have on multiple occasions with my two children seen people walk across the street to the other side of the sidewalk, not to pass us directly. My children are completely healthy. They are not sick with anything. It's not like they're coughing and sneezing and all that kind of stuff. They're happy, healthy, totally fine. And there have been adults that don't have children who are looking down. They will not make eye contact with us. Hmm. This has happened multiple times, not just once, not twice. I think three times over the course of 3 days. Yeah. And this is in a small area. There's really nobody around. And they're still afraid. They're afraid of our children.
Wow.
They're afraid of our healthy children. They have, the mainstream media has created this terrible narrative that children are silent carriers. They talk about them as vectors of disease, and they have misproportionately using the term asymptomatic carriers. They're using it wrong. So what they have been saying is these children are asymptomatic, and what they want you to believe is that these children have no symptoms. They're asymptomatic. That's like kind of what that phrase means. They want you to think that children look healthy, but they're secretly carrying coronavirus, and they're going to spread it to your grandmother or grandfather or somebody in a nursing home, and they're going to die. And that's why we had to, you know, shut all the schools down. So I came across some really good information today that's not part of what we're going to talk about, but we'll talk about this in a couple days, where the World Health Organization has not found a single case of a child bringing it to a household.
Okay.
They said it was the opposite. It was always an adult bringing it to a child, and the child experiences mild illness. Yeah. There has not been a single case, you guys, where a child has brought it to their household, and yet they shut down the entire school system in our state because they're worried they are silent carriers. And so what has happened now, the media puts this narrative forth, and then the average person sees children who are healthy and thinks that they are sick, but they don't know it, and they're going to make me sick. So not only do I not want to get close to them, I need to be far. I don't even want to look at them. So me and my kids have purposely been saying hello to everybody who's looking down at the ground. I'm like, hi, how are you? How you doing today? I'm like purposely putting people in the position to acknowledge we are people. We are all people. We're all in this together. I am very worried about what this is going to do for us as a society, because you've got this fear that is baseless. It's baseless fear. It is the same baseless fear of unvaccinated children.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this as these children who are just carrying all these diseases around. This is not a good or emotionally or mentally safe mindset for our society. The media and our government is not, they're not helping to calm the fears, saying, you know what, you don't need to be scared of children. They handle it mildly, and they have not been shown to actually be transmitting it anywhere. They're not doing that. Instead, what they're saying is to rationalize the school closures, which, by the way, 4 weeks of school closures for the United States will cost us $50 billion.
Oh, wow.
Just for 4 weeks. And Governor Newsom in California said he does not think schools will come back until fall. So you can think about the number of months, okay? $50 billion to close schools for children who have never been shown to bring it back to their households. And like I was saying this earlier today, what they've done is they've actually put children in a position to put elderly in their households at risk, because the only cases they have found are direct human-to-human contact. It's not really contagious in the community, according to China's data. And we'll go into details on this in the next couple of days. It's so super interesting. So they've done the opposite. They've shut the schools down. They've shut the jobs down. They've now put people together in these tight quarters, which is you're more likely to actually, you know, spread it that way. But back to what you were saying about the grocery stores being, you know, feeling friendly.
Well, I think people are not bringing their kids to grocery stores. In fact,
why?
Yeah, in fact, it's very interesting. Now that you mention it, I don't think I've seen a single child in any grocery store when I've been out and about.
But they're not in school.
You're right.
You know they're not in school. So that means somebody is making them stay at home with another person so they can go out by themselves.
Yeah.
Because why? Because they're afraid of the judgment. They're afraid of the social judgment. I had people comment on my post. I got the worst looks from people when they saw me out with my children.
I hadn't even thought of this. It hadn't even occurred to me.
Why there were no children at the grocery stores. Like, it was so quiet.
But even how parents would feel.
Right.
Walking around with their kids outside in a park even.
Right.
And even getting stares from people. That's very interesting. You're right about the dynamic and how that's going to set
for healthy
a mindset
children.
For America to view children that
to
way.
To view children as these disease vectors. And here's why this is a problem specifically for COVID-19. Children are not the ones really getting this in any serious way. The most interesting thing in the data about this coronavirus strain is how it does not affect children the way that any other virus does.
Right.
There has not been a single pediatric death in the world reported. There, I saw one in China, some 14-year-old boy.
Right.
We're talking about over 250 reported confirmed cases and likely millions of cases because of the ones that are undetected across the world. The flu kills children. The things that we know we live through and manage and we know are mild illnesses are still risky for some children. And this virus, for whatever reason, just like its relatives in the coronavirus family, like SARS, it's the same thing. They're not affecting children. And so it's just ironic to me that we have a society viewpoint now that children are dangerous for the one virus where children are not affected negatively, seriously, or you know, fatally.
Yeah, but everyone has that perception that children are the ones who spread colds.
Mm.
You know, not even so much all infectious diseases, but I think there's that impression. Yeah, you see kids, they're walking around, they're coughing all the time. They have runny noses. It's kind of like almost an expectation for kids. Like if I'm walking around and I hear a kid coughing, I'm like, oh, that's fine. You know, kids are often have a cold, you know, during the winter or whatever. But you're right. That is the perception that kids are carriers of colds. And none of us have been afraid of this until now. You know, suddenly there's this fear that kids are carrying this deadly, terrible disease when they're, you know, they're not. But even if they are, it's not deadly and terrible to most people anyway. But
and even
you're
worse,
totally right about that perception. I never even thought of that.
But even worse, the parents that are screaming from the rooftops about why we need strict social distancing right now are the same ones that send their children to school sick with the said colds because it's just a cold.
Yeah.
Or the kid has a runny nose, or I don't want to keep them home today because I have X, Y, and Z to do. Or I can't, because of my job, keep them home, so I'm going to send them to school. This kind of spurred my post, I think it was this morning, which has gotten a lot of agreement and has gotten a little bit of hate. That this idea that we are all, quote, social distancing, right? A term nobody's ever heard before this, by the way.
Right.
Not to say it wasn't that was in existence in the medical community, but it wasn't something that was used amongst the public. And now everybody's using it. It's like another one of these media sound bites, like this trend term. So it's everybody's all about social distancing right now as it relates to this. And I've heard from people saying, if I can just save one elderly person, if me staying home can help save one life. And all I can think about is all of the other months people were sick with respiratory viruses, with influenza, and they're out shopping during Christmas, and they are going to the club, to the bar, to the restaurant. They're visiting their friends' houses. People do not stop their lives when they're sick. People go out into the world when they're sick. And guess what? What they could have could pass to another person who passes it to an elderly person, or they could directly pass it to an elderly person who develops complications because they have a pre-existing medical condition. And that elderly person could actually die from that transmission. But every single one of these people never stayed home and social distanced themselves during this process. They never thought to stay home 7 to 14 days to self-quarantine to make sure the elderly or immunocompromised person would not be at risk. For every other respiratory virus, every other flu, cold that they have that could be dangerous to somebody who is in the same risk category as what we're looking at with coronavirus. I find this super ironic and also very hypocritical that we've got people talking about our social responsibility as it relates to quarantining and why it's okay that people are losing their jobs. It's okay that people are losing thousands and tens of thousands, possibly more than that. And it's going to affect their future for possibly decades, even with just 4 days. Because when you have a small business, it does not just up and run again after several weeks. That's not how it works. People don't have, especially in places like Southern California, it's expensive to live here. People don't have reserves. The kind of reserves, they didn't know this was coming. People weren't prepared for this. And so we've got all of this shaming online, all of this judgment about, I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to stay home if I can just save one person, because I don't want to sacrifice a person for somebody's business money or somebody's income. And I'm looking at this discussion like, where were you 2 months ago during the peak of the flu season when people were dying every single day? Because we've got maybe about 20 to 30,000 respiratory virus deaths. That's not just influenza. That's what the CDC will say. But these are deaths due to pneumonia, which is a complication of respiratory virus. It could have been the flu. That was only about 30% of cases, according to lab work in the United States. 20 to 30% of cases are influenza. That means 70 to 80% of cases are another respiratory virus where it caused pneumonia and caused a fatality. 20 to 30,000 people just in the United States every year die from a respiratory illness. We are at 220 deaths from coronavirus in the entire United States. Not to minimize the fact that those are deaths, I understand that, but not only did we not shut down the economy, we didn't kick people out of schools, but nobody was social distancing, not even voluntarily.
Right, with the flu, with all these past flu seasons.
With all of these, I mean, even a couple years ago with our strong flu season where the CDC estimated 80,000 deaths, nobody was crying from the hilltops that we all need to do our part and you need to stay home and it's the right thing to do and I'm going to save one elderly person. No, they were going out to the mall and buying Christmas presents for everybody and staying up late, eating all these sugary foods, getting sick, not getting sleep. And they were writing it off as just normal winter activity. Yeah. It was to be expected. And as it relates to Italy, I've said this before in some of my posts, 300,000 elderly people die every single winter in Italy. 300,000 people from the age of 65 and over die every single year from respiratory viruses and other causes, any cause. That's a lot of people, but nobody's ever talked about it. You've never heard that number before because it's not on the news. Now we've had 4,000 deaths in elderly from the coronavirus, 4,000 compared to 300,000 in Italy. And all of a sudden people are concerned with what's happening there and how to protect the elderly. The elderly are dying there every single year at disproportionately higher levels because they have about 25% of their entire population that's elderly. Mm-hmm. The United States, we have 16%. That's a big difference. There are a lot of smokers in Italy, and the elderly have been smoking for 40, 50 years. There are different population factors in different countries, but and we'll get into some of that. But I'm just saying, this has been going on every single day for every single winter for every single year. People are dying every single day. People are dying of respiratory viruses every single day in our country and in every country around the world. And nobody is stopping to talk about why we need to social distance and why it's our responsibility. So to me, again, you may not agree with this. To me, it feels very hypocritical. It's not to say there's not a benefit to that. And I do believe people that are in at-risk category should absolutely self-quarantine and should be in a situation where they stay away from any situation where there's high levels of respiratory illness, because it could be the flu that's the thing that's responsible for their death. That's not to say that's not a bad, it's not saying it's a bad measure, but to shut down our entire economy, to shut down our entire state, the schools, we're talking about a domino effect that we don't even know. We don't know what this is going to look like. It's never happened. For anybody to say this is going to be fine and we're going to bounce back, nobody has a clue that that's true. Not one person can tell us with any certainty that people will not lose their businesses, will not go bankrupt, will not be unemployed, will not have mental health damage, increased suicide, increased unemployment, the destruction of families, poverty, all the things that come with it. There's not a single person that could tell us that's not going to happen.
Well, I think a lot of...
Not even you.
Right, I know. And I'm hopeful that that won't happen. I think a lot of it has to do with how long this is drawn out. How long
this
whole social distancing and shutting down states, how long that goes on. And to me, I mean, I don't know exactly all the reasons why this has happened, but I think there was that initial panic and fear as soon as we found out what was happening in China and we got word that, you know, lots of people were dying. It was a new virus. And there was a lot of uncertainty and there was so much unknown. So all of a sudden we have this new disease. And so I think people are going to naturally fear that and decide, oh my gosh, you know, we really need to do something. We need to take action. It's so hard to not take action and not to do something. I mean, that's very, very difficult. And so I feel like that's kind of why we kind of had to make a lot of these moves, is we didn't have enough data. We didn't have enough information. We're going to talk about a lot of these problems are because we don't have the data we need. But I think there's just that natural fear over this new thing. So I'm not too surprised that people are making these decisions. But what I worry about, you know, from what you were just saying, it kind of made me think, I don't want our society to have this new dynamic where social distancing becomes the new norm, not just when coronavirus is over, but, you know, for generations. You know, are we going to start fearing kids all the time?
Right.
Are we going to, you know, have new rules? Are we not going to hang out like we used to? And is this fear going to continue? And that's why I think a lot of people are writing articles that we're going to go over that, I mean, that are really trying to address this. You know, is this really the right approach to create this total fear and shut everything down? It's not a surprising approach. I'm not surprised we're doing this or making this choice, but
you aren't, not to the extent that you're not surprised, well, even a little.
Well, I partly am, but I'm partly not, just because of the unknown and the fear and the novelty of this and how it's all new. And honestly, I feel like, but again, I don't want our society to have this new dynamic. We need to get back to normal life as soon as possible. I think that's critical. But kind of my perception is, our the leaders of our country were faced with this fear of this new virus that was potentially deadly. They were not getting the information and the data from China that we needed to make the right decisions. And so I think one choice was to do nothing and just let it come in and let it spread everywhere and deal with it. But if that had gone badly, and things could still go badly, I mean, things could get worse and worse and more people start dying. And if we did nothing, then all the blame goes on people for doing nothing, right? And we say, well, gosh, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you close the borders to China? So, but then there's also the extreme where we completely 100% like mandate quarantines, make everyone stay in their homes, and everyone, you can't even go outside your house. That's like the extreme measures, you know, police measures. And
I feel like we're not that far from that, though, because Governor Newsom has talked about using enforcement, law enforcement, and National Guard to make sure people are abiding by this social distancing.
But I think what I think one of the reasons we're talking about this and one of the reasons a lot of people are writing about this is I think the majority of the public, I think, doesn't want to see it go that far. And if it does go that far, that's going to hurt us if that goes on for such a long time.
So let me also say something for anybody that watched Governor Newsom's conference today. He spoke again. Did you see it?
I didn't see it.
They are allowing questions from the press, and I believe these questions are given in advance and they are approved in advance. And I can tell that because the press is not asking questions that the American public or the California citizens would be asking. In fact, every one of their questions is about why he's not doing more.
Wow.
So there was somebody who got on there saying, you know, you've been talking about social distancing, Governor Newsom, but I don't think people are taking it seriously. There were people out at a farmer's market today and they weren't standing far enough away from each other. Okay. So for example, farmer's markets are on the approved list of places people can go. It's essential because we're talking about fresh foods, fresh vegetables. Remember, in order to weather the storm on this, you need to be healthy. That means you need good quality food. Yeah. Cutting and shutting down all farmers markets is not going to help anybody. So anyway, in the question, she's saying, I don't think people get it. Maybe they didn't listen to you. Shouldn't you be doing more? And I think everybody else in California is thinking, are you freaking kidding me? Like doing more? How much further could you go? People were excited to go to a farmer's market to be able to get fresh fruit and vegetables.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think there's the danger of doing too much.
Of course.
And so I think for me, I mean, where maybe you and I might disagree a little bit is that I'm glad we're doing some things. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we're trying to, prevent minimize the how the virus is coming into the country, minimize travel. I've accepted the fact that our government of California has decided to shut everything down, and I can't do anything to stop that, so I have to abide by that. But what I'm hoping is that the federal government so far, I mean, they're talking about this 15-day plan. You've heard it. You've read that. You've seen. Mm-hmm. The federal government is looking at 15 days for everybody to kind of do everything they reasonably can to reduce the spread of this. Social distancing, wash your hands, don't go to public places that are maybe not so necessary. Three states have really shut down, California being one of them, but most states have not shut down like we have to the same extent as we have. They shut down the colleges and the schools, but they're looking at 15 days of this. And it's my hope that
that's what you're saying. They've already changed the dates though to April 6th and then April 13th.
I'm talking federal government.
Oh, you're saying
federal government. President Trump today, they even reiterated, we have this 15-day plan. That's what we're going with so far on the federal level. And if we can mitigate the effects and the spread of this virus in that time, instead of having done nothing, will have achieved some benefits. And then what I'm hoping is businesses can reopen. We can go back on with their lives.
You're talking about two weeks.
I would love to see people, reopen schools and, realize that children are not the danger and that life can return to normal. And so I like the direction that the federal government is taking this so far. But then some states are taking it further, states that kind of feel like they have to. And I just hope it doesn't go any further. And if it's short term,
I feel like the short term thing is the bait and switch.
And I hope it isn't. And you could be right. I feel like it isn't.
We're just going to do 2 weeks, everybody. Just calm down. Just get enough food for two weeks. And then all of a sudden they're going to be like, oh, looks like it's worse than we thought.
I know. And if it goes longer, if it dries out, that's when the depression is going to sit in and the mental health issues and the fear. fear.
There's no coming back from that.
The fear. And that's why as a society, I don't want it to see it go there. But I think I also worry on the other extreme, if we had like done nothing or done too little,
right. I understand.
Then where would we be? And so I guess I kind of see us taking this moderate approach, is how I see this, with a few states being extreme. And I'm hoping that all the governors of all these states and the federal government can get together and see eye to eye and say, let's take these moderate approaches and these wise steps, and then let's not, you know, let the fear take hold, and let's not this totally change society, and let's not huddle in our homes for months and months. Let's get on with life now that we've put a dent or flattened the curve a little bit, or you know, shifted the curve.
Did you just say flatten? I just said flatten the curve.
Oh, no, I know, but
you're one of them.
But I mean, I know, but
please don't say safe and effective next.
I mean, that's just kind of my take so far. And you know,
I know you're hopeful. You always see the best in things and all that kind of stuff. I'm a little more jaded at this point, obviously. Mm-hmm. So speaking of this idea of maybe a moderate approach, let's talk about the first article, which was the UK and their idea originally of herd immunity as it relates to this. So a couple important things that I've been thinking about as it relates to this virus. It's a new virus. This is what you're saying. It's not part of a new family of viruses, though. Right. There are other sister viruses in this family that have been here for a long time. This is a, quote, new virus. So we're going to talk about the article about the UK and what their chief scientific advisor said about perhaps letting the country catch the virus, quarantining the people that are at risk. So this is, to me, this is a moderate approach. This is a compromise. Let's let the elderly quarantine, those with immunocompromised conditions, underlying health conditions. Let's keep them a self-quarantine, not mandated, a self-quarantine. Let's let people go to school and let people work and hope that our society gains about 60% coverage to protect the country and therefore actually end up protecting those risk groups in the end.
Eventually. Yeah.
Right. And so this is the UK's chief scientific advisor. His name is Sir Patrick Vallance. And he said the government wants 60% of the population to catch coronavirus to create herd immunity to protect against the virus becoming an annual crisis. So what's so interesting is when I posted this, I had so many people just like, what, you don't care that people die? Like, who are you to make these decisions? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm literally passing on the information of the chief scientific advisor. You don't think this dude understands how viruses work? He's obviously, this is his line. This is what he does. Anyway, so he continued by saying, we don't want everyone to get it in a short period of time and then overwhelm the health services. And that's one of the big arguments that we've seen. We see the argument that our hospitals are getting overrun. So, and that's a valid thing. I get that. And so this is where this idea of flatten the curve came from. Let's not have everybody get it once and overwhelm our hospitals.
Yeah. But what's overwhelming the hospitals is the panic from barely sick people.
I
know people
that
are barely sick. I just have a cold, but I want to be tested for coronavirus. I've had patients and friends who we wouldn't test them. So they would go to the ER, ask to be tested. And the ER is like, well, sorry, we're not going to test you because that's not an appropriate use of our resources right now. It's the panic and the initial panic. And I think that's changing. I think the educational process where everyone's saying, no, if you have cold symptoms, just stay home.
Right.
Don't flood the ERs. And I think people are learning that and people are starting to get that.
It's taken a while,
right. But that's what's overwhelming. It's not that there's so many people who are terribly sick from coronavirus.
That are positive, right.
Right, that's overwhelming. Those people are going to start filling up the ICUs and filling up the ERs as this moves forward. But it's the inappropriate use that's overwhelming. And so that's why the education is important.
Okay, so let's address this, though. I know many of you think this already, and I do too. don't you think coronavirus has already been here for a couple months?
Right. Yeah. It's
like,
likely. Yeah.
This idea that it's going to start overwhelming our system because now all of a sudden people are going to get it. I don't know that that's really true because I feel like it's been here since December. So they say about 14,000 people travel between the United States and China every single day, every single day. So by the time that they understood that there was an issue in December, there were people traveling back and forth consistently. I have heard numerous reports of doctors saying that they had this like mysterious virus going around.
Oh, yeah, me too. I've been telling almost every single patient I see, well, you know, I know it's flu season, but it doesn't seem like you have the flu. It seems like you have a really bad cough. And everyone I'm seeing, like their coughs are worse this winter and the coughs are lasting for like 3 or 4 weeks instead of 1 or 2 weeks. And yeah, something went around this winter that was not the flu.
Right.
Flu went around too, but there was a really terrible cold going around. And you're right. It's very possible in hindsight that coronavirus has been here this whole time.
How could it not have been? With the amount of travel that we have between the two countries, if it was blowing up there at that same time, the chances are somebody came here and exposed. And it's a respiratory virus, so it kind of just got lumped in with all the other non-flu, negative influenza respiratory viruses, because people were testing for the flu and they were negative.
Right.
They were actually negative, lab confirmed negative, so you know it's something else, but it was something a lot of medical professionals said they had not seen before.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit off this year. So, I mean, just the fact that we had something circulating potentially, everybody's now seeing the numbers in the United States of cases go up and they're freaking out. But remember, you guys, they just started testing. They're just starting to test now. Those numbers are going to go up. It doesn't mean it's spreading more now. It just means we know who the cases are now. And I think a lot of people had it over the last three months and didn't even know.
That was the main point of one of these articles that we're probably eventually going to get to tonight or another night, is one person said, our biggest problem is the lack of data. And we have not gathered the right data in order to be making the right decisions. You know, what this guy was saying was, we need to research subsets of our population, check everybody's immunities for coronavirus, see if a whole bunch of people in a certain population are already immune to it, have already had it. So we don't even have to worry about it. We could easily collect the data in order to know to what degree does the government need to shut things down?
Exactly.
We could approach it in that way instead of just shutting everything down everywhere. Or we could learn what we need to learn if we took a better approach, not a fear-based approach, but a data collection.
An accurate approach.
Yes, studying the population to see if it's already here, if a bunch of people are already immune, and so we don't have to shut everything down. So I feel like, I don't know, I mean, hopefully all these minds are getting together and they're going to make smarter decisions after this first, you know, 15-day trial.
But let's shut down everything while we come up with our decisions before. I mean, like, that seems like that's what you would do, the decisions first, and then the shutdown would come next.
Anyway.
Especially considering that's never happened
before.
Yeah,
but when you talked about that, it just made me realize, a lot of people are talking about this. There's a better way to do this through research and data collection than just what we're doing
now. And so what if we tested our population? So Governor Newsom says California, if we don't do this severe shutdown, then about 25 million people would catch it, right? And then everybody assumes, because they look at the fatality rate, they go, oh my God, 3% of 25 million, we're going to have millions or several hundred thousands that are dying. That's not how numbers work, okay? If you're not a numbers person, that's not how it works. So just let me quickly tell you, based on China's data, according to China's data, only about 3% of the population got it. Okay. Out of that 3%, only about 2% died from it. Okay. And only about 0.2% between the ages of 0 and 50 died from it. So if you were to take actual raw numbers, you have to look at the percentage. Here's your population. Multiply that by 0.03 to find out what about 3% of the population would be. Multiply that number by 0.02 to find out what 2% of the population would be, and 0.002 to find out what the population would be from 0 to 49 years old. The number, so if you're looking at a population of a million per se, let's say the number turns out to be 600 for the 2% and like 39 or something like that for the 0.2%, or I guess it would be 6, 60, 60, somewhere around 60, for a million people. It's not in the millions. Like, people are taking the population of the United States and saying it's 330 million, and they're multiplying that by 3% and saying this is what's going to happen if we don't do something drastic. But that's not what has happened in other countries, because 100% of the population is not exposed to it. Only about 2 to 3% of the population is really ever exposed to it, according to the data that we've seen for this virus. Everybody thinks it's super, super contagious, but data in China is actually showing it's not airborne the way people think. It has to be close contact respiratory drops, close contact. Right. And everybody's worried that it lives on surfaces for days, but they actually found that over an hour, it decreases in the strength of the virus in just by being in contact with the air. So even though the presence is detected, it doesn't mean it's going to infect somebody.
Wouldn't it be more accurate to say that, I mean, of what, 3% of the people in China caught it?
Right.
Wouldn't it be more accurate to say 3% were symptomatic and got sick from it?
Well, not, you're right. Okay, so not even 3% of their whole population, just 3% of the areas exposed even at that point, because obviously there are people off in the mountains that weren't, you know, right, exposed to it, and their population is 1.4 billion. But yes, 3% is only, these are only the people that went to seek treatment.
Right, so yeah, so probably a lot of people were exposed and a lot of people caught it and barely had symptoms.
Completely. I would not be surprised if they have millions of cases for positive COVID-19.
What about even
China?
Could we even say the majority of them, like more than half the population, has like caught it and become, you know, immune, or I don't know.
Well, right.
That's what we have to figure out. They'll learn that.
So, but the estimate for California to say that half of our state would catch it, the Governor Newsom said we have to go on lockdown or else 25 million. That there's no way you can make that estimation. Right. That is mathematical modeling that is based on contagion ratios that are not, they're affecting the entire population, which is not what happens with a virus. So everybody's freaking out because they think this is like literally going to, everybody's going to catch it. And let me just explain, you cannot outrun this. Okay, so you can go into hiding for a couple weeks or a month, but guess what? When you come out, it's still going to be there. Right. It might not be there in a peak, like influenza has its highs and lows, but it's going to be there.
Right. If that's inevitable anyway,
it's inevitable
then the length of time we spend in the shutdown wouldn't matter. It only matters to, I'll say it again, to flatten the curve.
For the hospitals.
Right.
And for maybe getting a peak at one moment. That's the only reason, which I get.
Right, to ease the burden on so the healthcare system isn't overloaded so much.
Right.
But you're right. When we come, I'll come out of hiding, we're all going to be faced with the same situation. So therefore, it seems to make the most sense to make this shutdown period as short as possible.
Right.
So that we can then move on. And we're not economically and mentally and physically devastated by this, and you know our whole, you know, kind of life as we know it comes to an end, and we have to find this new way to do society, because we've just, you know, taken the most drastic unnecessary steps possible out of fear and for political reasons, and so that's why I hope wiser minds will prevail, and the scientists will get together and figure out the right approaches to this.
Multiple experts have said there is no way to contain it. There is no way to escape it. And just like the chief scientific advisor here from the UK says, you can't stop it. This is what he says. You can't stop it. You can't stop it. He's saying this. This guy is the chief scientific advisor for the entire nation of the United Kingdom. Okay. He said, so you need to get more people to get immunity to this. This is part of the protective process. He said, this is quite likely, and here's the next point, to become an annual virus. So I've heard time and time again.
I hope not.
I've heard time and time again that this is going to be a new seasonal virus.
All cold viruses are, right?
Right. And flu viruses and strains like
coronaviruses
that.
Coronaviruses is a cold virus for the most part. We've been catching coronaviruses for years when we catch simple colds.
Right. So this particular virus, you guys, they're saying it's going to come back, which means...
Maybe. They don't know for sure. But
my point is, let's say it is a seasonal virus. Two things you have to pay attention to. If this is a seasonal virus, then the overload to the hospitals is going to happen again. This thing that we're doing right now to shut down the entire economy is not going to save the hospitals, because next year we're in the same boat. What are we going to do? Shut down the economy again? Is everybody going to be out of work again? Can they do this? Can we sustain if this is the type of drastic action they take multiple times? People will not be able to survive. So if this is in fact something that's going to come back, then we're going to have to deal with the hospital situation. And I want to say, in Italy, people don't know this, but a couple years ago in Milan, which is the main area of the epicenter of the outbreak of the coronavirus, by the way, this is in the Lombardia region, which is where Milan is, and that has the highest number of Chinese immigrants, by the way, which is where they think this kind of came from, over 100,000 Chinese immigrants in Milan. So in that busy city center, I think that region has about 14 million people. Look at me with my numbers. I'm not even looking at the
paperwork,
guys.
I'm just sitting here thinking like doctory things.
No, you're just like, I'm hungry. Can I have a snack? Oh my gosh. Where's those almonds are looking good.
I was going to text Cheryl saying, like, I'm so not even going to be ready for dinner, like, by 9. Uh-huh. But seriously, the way you deal with these numbers astounds me. Because
numbers
that's
is
your
important.
Thing.
Numbers, like, that's your thing, numbers right? are important. This is not opinion. This is, you know, this is important. But in Milan, the hospitals in the 2017-18 influenza season were completely overrun. They were overburdened. They had to call doctors and nurses from neighboring cities and counties to come in to help them. They had to take rooms that were not used for patients to turn into makeshift rooms. They were asking for blood donations for transfusions and things that they would need. They were completely overrun and overwhelmed. This is before the coronavirus. Do you understand? Hospitals get overwhelmed and overrun with respiratory illnesses. Sometimes on a very high year, just in the United States or in other countries. This is not new. This virus is not so bad it's overrunning the health system. Our health system gets overrun already. And if that's an issue, then that's what they need to address. How about you take the money that you're now having to spend on this government shutdown, and like one of these articles said, build new hospitals, provide more beds in the hospitals that you have to handle the flattening of the curve, to not put the burden on our medical community. I understand that, but this is not a solution to that. This is not really a solution, because you guys, if this comes again next year, we're in the same boat. Do you understand? People can't social distance for months on end.
Right. But what I'm hoping is that the reason we've done this is because of the initial fear of the unknown. And then as we learn more and we realize that this if this becomes an inevitable, you know, seasonal outbreak, we'll start treating it like we're treating the flu now.
Okay, so right? Oops, we sort of thought we had to overdo this the first year. We didn't realize it. I'm so sorry to all the small business owners who just couldn't get their businesses up and running again. Better to be safe than sorry. I mean, you don't get to make those kind of decisions when we're talking about people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about their livelihood for this year, next year, the next 10 years, the next 20 years.
To me, it's hard for me to blame them because of the initial reports we got out of China. And the initial fear and what we thought it was doing in China, and we thought it was way more severe than the reality seems to be playing out.
But
now they're kind of stuck a little bit with this temporary shutdown again, because to do nothing,
I understand.
It, like I said earlier, so to don't do nothing is really hard.
So don't do nothing. Right. But I'm sorry, there are experts that it is their job to analyze data. And the thing is the coronavirus is part of a sister virus that we've seen the outbreak before. We've seen the SARS outbreak. They have data to look at that and see who it's going to affect, how it's going to spread. Maybe it's going to be a little different, but they have something to go off of. This feels like a very all of a sudden, let's make this choice. Let's do it. Let's act now. Yeah. Think later.
Well, I mean, you make a good point, because some of the articles we have they're coming from, you know, professors from Stanford, professors from Yale, from Harvard. You know, some of the top minds in epidemiology,
pulmonologists, people that actually—they're literally studying respiratory viruses in different countries. We're talking about Israel, the UK, Sweden. Articles from Italy, articles from South Korea, articles from China, articles from the United States. This is from all over the world, the information that we're bringing you today. Yeah. Some of this is just in our conversation.
Yeah, I mean, they're all saying similar things, that we shouldn't take huge drastic measures. We might be overstepping it. We could be more targeted and in who, you know, we're asking to self-quarantine. And again, for me, the take-home message and my hope, again, is that this is all short. We've overstepped it, especially in three states, California, Washington, and New York. If we've overstepped it, let's realize it and bring us back to sanity soon. And the federal government has allowed the states to make these individual decisions, and they so far are not so much like overstepping things other than what is less of a shutdown than we're dealing with in California. You know, they're mostly shutting down internationally, you know, travel and everything, and then they're trying to equip all the states to deal with this, especially the states that are the hardest hit. And hopefully these wise minds will prevail, and things again will calm down. We won't go past that 15-day mark that the federal government is pushing for. And you know, will the governor of California listen to that, or won't he? And I don't know. That remains to be seen.
Well, so thanks for joining us. This has been really interesting. I think we have more to cover. Why don't we go into a part two, Dr. Bob?
Yeah,
what do you think?
This is a great place to leave off, Melissa. Great
okay.
idea.
And so thanks for joining us, you guys, on this part one episode of Coronavirus Updates in Real Time with Melissa and Dr. Bob on the Vaccine Conversation.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.